Welcome to this Elite Learning Podcast CE activity. Our goal is to bring you speakers, information, and ideas to educate and challenge you to grow. Get ready to listen, learn, and earn CE hours.
This is Dr. Candace Pierce with Elite Learning by Calibri Healthcare, and you are listening to our Elite Learning podcast, where we share the most up-to-date education for healthcare professionals. I welcome our listeners joining us for a tough but necessary discussion about nurses' mental health. And joining me for this discussion today is Dr. Mariah Ward, a family nurse practitioner. Dr. Ward, thank you for taking time to join us for this discussion.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
Before we jump into this discussion, I do want to warn our listeners that this episode discusses mental health issues, including depression, PTSD, and suicide. And while we believe that these conversations are important, we also know that they can be difficult for some listeners. So please take care of yourself and seek the support if you need it. Mariah, can you share a little about your background and expertise in this area?
So I am a family nurse practitioner. I've been an FNP for about 4 years. I am currently in a postgraduate certificate program set to graduate in May of 2024 for psychiatric mental health. I do a lot of mental health treatments currently at my organization and am currently helping build out a behavioral health program for my organization to include medication and psychotherapy management. And so I am very passionate about mental health, especially suicide prevention and awareness as well, but definitely mental health as a whole.
Absolutely. All right. So to help us really jump into this discussion, I want to throw an incomplete statement out there for you. And if you could just share what comes to your mind, the statement is, nurses, mental health, and the alarming issue of nurses experiencing suicidal thoughts and actions.
Yeah, I think that this, I think about it requiring, you know, proactive strategies to promote well-being, destigmatizing mental health struggles, and providing accessible resources. I think those are the things that really come to mind when I think about it, because I think about how stigmatized mental health is and how inaccessible resources are for everybody, not just nurses, you know, for any kind of mental health treatment.
Absolutely. And I think that all the things you mentioned, we're going to be talking about today through the series. So what are some of the unique stressors and challenges that nurses face in their roles?
I think there's several, but definitely long hours and shift work. So most nurses are working 12-hour shifts, which include nights, weekends, and holidays. This really disrupts their sleep patterns, impacts their work-life balance, and leads to physical and emotional exhaustion. There are high patient volumes and staffing shortages, so chronic understaffing plagues most of nursing. This means that nurses are responsible for excessive patient loads, which makes it challenging to provide adequate care to each individual. And it also compromises patient safety while increasing the nurse's stress and risk of burnout. There's emotional demands, right? So nurses often witness suffering, pain, and death on a regular basis. They support families and patients through complex diagnoses, loss, and end-of-life care. And this places a really significant emotional burden on nurses. There are other workplace pressures, right? It's a high-pressure, fast-paced environment with very little room for error. There's demanding workloads with very limited resources. They're exposed to violence and verbal abuse from patients and families and even other staff members, in the form of workplace bullying or conflicts with colleagues. There are also ethical dilemmas and moral distress, and just a general lack of support. So there's inadequate mental health support, debriefing opportunities, or even organizational recognition of the job's emotional tone that really exacerbates stress and leaves nurses feeling isolated. So these really are, they combine to contribute to high rates of burnout, compassion fatigue, depression, anxiety, and even suicidal thoughts and actions among nursing staff.
Absolutely. Two words that have become really popular over the last couple of years are burnout and compassion fatigue. Can you break those down for us?
Yeah. So burnout is just that condition of just being really overworked and overstimulated by your environment. And it leads to you being kind of like just having a lack of interest in doing things, not being able to even get out of bed, shower, do the basics, right? So it kind of makes it challenging to want to do anything. And then you combine that with the compassion fatigue, which is just like you start to really not be able to empathize and sympathize with people. You become shorter and more disengaged from your patient population, and that really, you know, it takes away from the patient experience, and it becomes more challenging for us to navigate that emotional aspect of our job, which makes nursing kind of unique, is that emotional aspect of it.
Absolutely. And being a nurse is very emotional. Like you were saying, a lot of emotional demands, and we see a lot of things. But one of the things that we don't do is we don't debrief what we see. Do you think that plays a role into a lot of the compassion fatigue and the burnout that we're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we don't debrief, we internalize a lot of what's going on, and we don't see that other people struggle with the same thoughts and feelings that we do. So we not only internalize it, but we also kind of rationalize it away and say, well, nobody else feels this. It's just me. And so, you know, it kind of further stigmatizes getting assistance from other people. In real world application, you know, it makes it more challenging for us to engage in mental health services and getting assistance.
Absolutely. So we talked about the unique stressors and challenges, but what are some of the unique factors that can negatively impact the mental health of the nurse? You know, the work environment, the types of stress, the trauma exposure.
So for work environment, I think there's just that chronic understaffing and excessive workloads that we talked about. So there's a feeling of being overwhelmed, inadequate, and we're always pressured to do more with less. And so there's that. There's a lack of control and autonomy. So we have very limited influence over scheduling, decision-making, even the pace of work that can contribute to feelings of helplessness. Workplace violence can occur. So physical and verbal abuse from patients, families, or even colleagues, you know, is unfortunately common and deeply traumatizing. And poor organizational support, lack of resources, inadequate mental health support, and dismissive attitudes towards burnout, which just creates and further perpetuates a toxic environment. You think about the joke that goes around right now, which is, you know, pizza parties solve everything, right? And so that's clearly not the way that we're going to treat that. There's a lot of stress, so we're constantly making high-stake decisions. We are taking a lot of responsibility, even with life and death decisions that are often made under pressure. We're never making them under sound conditions. They're moral distress, so where we face situations where we feel like we're unable to provide care. We feel maybe that this is forced to witness care that we believe is suboptimal, which just creates a deep ethical burden, or even give suboptimal care because we just don't have that ability to manage it. And then, you know, we have this work-life unbalance. So these long shifts and unpredictable schedules really wreak havoc on our personal relationships, social support, and self-care. And then, you know, with the trauma exposure, we witness a lot of suffering, death, and serious injury, you know, which leads to secondary traumatic stress and compassion fatigue. We care for victims of violence or abuse. So we support patients through traumatic experiences, which we do shoulder that. And medical errors, you know, the weight of responsibility and potential consequences of errors can be psychologically devastating. We live in a punitive culture in healthcare. Yeah. And so if we make a mistake, we are often punished and not really like, there's not a further investigation into what maybe caused that. And then some other factors I think are like the stigma surrounding mental health. So I think that there's a reluctance to seek help due to fear of judgment or perceived weakness. And then the shift work disruption, which is often underplayed and underemphasized, but this disruptive sleep and circadian rhythms are associated with increased risk of mood disorders, suicidal ideation. So I think that it, you know, all of this together puts us at an alarming risk for mental health problems, including PTSD, depression, and anxiety, and even substance abuse. And I really want to emphasize that secondhand trauma exposure is a known way to get PTSD. So you don't have to have experienced the condition yourself. Just reliving it through a patient's perspective can cause PTSD. And that's really important to emphasize, because especially during the pandemic, there was a lot going on that fell into that category.
Absolutely. And I think it's also, and we'll get into this later, but even with PTSD, we think we know what the symptoms or signs of PTSD are, but I didn't understand the signs of PTSD so that I could pinpoint that that's what was going on. Healthcare workers go through a lot, nurses go through a lot, and there's nobody really there to try to make sure that we are safe, that we have the tools to debrief, that we're given an opportunity to rest. And that is huge. And I think you're about to go into why this is such a conversation that we need to have. And it's a conversation that I think needs to be held with organizations, healthcare organizations, leadership. It needs to be more than just with nurses, because we have to do more to protect those who care for others.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
What is the current state of nurses' suicide rates and the mental health concerns? And have any recent studies shed light around this issue?
Yeah, so we know that there's an elevated suicide risk in nurses. So studies have consistently demonstrated that we have a higher risk of suicide, usually about 17.1 per million. And this is in comparison to 8.6. So this is like double the rate of what the general population experiences. This is really pronounced amongst female nurses, which we know makes up a good portion of nursing staff. And worsening mental health. So nurses are reporting higher rates of depression, anxiety, burnout, and PTSD. And COVID-19 further exacerbated these mental health challenges. So they were already here, but then COVID-19 really kind of pushed us over the edge. Some recent studies. So there was an American Nurses Association study that found that 23% of nurses have contemplated suicide. And the most cited risk factors were being overworked at work, overworked, stress, and feeling unsupported. And so kind of some of those things that we highlighted a little bit earlier too. A meta-analysis in the International Journal of Nursing Studies also confirmed that nurses have a heightened risk of suicide compared to the general population. And really, there are some studies on the COVID-19 impact. So it really highlights the pandemic's devastating toll on nurses' mental health, with increased rates of anxiety, depression, and trauma. And these really matter because the rates of nursing suicide and mental health struggles highlight the severity of the crisis within the profession. So it underscores the need for urgent action to address systemic factors that are affecting nurses' well-being and to prioritize better mental health support within our industry. And that's really important, especially when we talk about how do we mitigate that suicide risk, and how do we encourage our nurses to care for themselves. And it really starts by looking at the systemic needs and what are we avoiding in the healthcare field.
Why do you think COVID-19 really brought this out in the light for healthcare providers?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of factors. There was a lot of misunderstanding and knowledge gaps on COVID-19. We saw a lot of people who we would normally see in the hospital make full recoveries, code, and die, right? And we also, I know from my perspective, when the COVID-19 pandemic started, I was still working on the floor, and we turned into a, because we were a pulmonary unit, we turned into a COVID unit. And a lot of the unknown, we really didn't understand what we needed to do. How did we protect ourselves? How did we, those kind of things. So it was really challenging. Hours got cut because all of our elective surgeries, stuff like that, started getting canceled. We went on a lockdown, which meant that people just weren't going out. Even if they needed to go to the hospital, they weren't coming. And then, about halfway through 2020, we got a huge spike in hospital admissions and patients, and then we were being put into mandatory overtime. So it was like, mm-hmm. our value was kind of undermined, you know. We weren't getting paid for our for not working, right? We were, some mm-hmm. of us were furloughed, some of us were, our hours reduced significantly, and then we were then like pushed into overworking again. So it was just like this mm-hmm. very jarring change, and it all happened within a matter of like days at the beginning, and then every single day there was a new change, and then, you know, and it felt like a never ending kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of ethical dilemmas, such as, do I take care and make sure I'm safe versus taking care of a patient? So you had to make those choices. Separating from family members because you made the choice to continue working in the hospital and we didn't know a lot of information. So, you know, separating yourself from your family in order to care for other people. You saw a lot of death. You saw a lot of types of treatments that you never have seen before. Had to work through how to properly care for someone without putting other people at risk. Like, you know, you run a code. How many people do you have in the room now? And who goes in? And a lot of devastation and loss of family members of other nurses, you know, like a nurse losing their mom. And did I cause that? So I saw a lot of ethical and moral dilemmas that a lot of healthcare workers were going through, which I think really helped in raising and bringing to light the suffering that healthcare workers actually go through, even before we ever had COVID.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you look at and stigma around mental health and healthcare workers, we know that there is a stigma. Why?
Yeah, I think there's partly, it's, you know, the culture of strength. So our healthcare environments emphasize resilience, stoicism, and the expectation that providers should be able to handle extreme stress without showing vulnerability. Maybe there's a fear of consequences. So healthcare workers might fear disclosing mental health struggles could negatively impact their job security, licensure, or even professional reputation. There is self-stigma. So many healthcare workers internalize that they should be fixers. And not people who need help. And this can make them reluctant to acknowledge their struggles. And then time and access, all right? So long shifts, demanding schedules, and limited workplace mental health resources, that really creates practical issues, you know, in accessing appropriate care. So those all contribute to why it's so challenging to, you know, even access a resource, even if you wanted to.
So are we seeing these stigmas? I know we have internalized stigmas as healthcare providers because we are fixers and we think we don't need to be fixed. We are probably some of the most needed fixing people mm-hmm. because we give so much of ourselves to other people. But is the stigma within the healthcare organization, within the organization, besides the ones that we put on ourselves? Where else are these stigmas originating?
Yeah, I think the healthcare organization expects you to, you know, do things outside of their scope. So they want you to be at work when you're at work, but then, you know, the hoops you have to jump through if you do need like mental health resources and are kind of cumbersome. And then if you do utilize your organization's EAP, is your boss going to get that information? How do we navigate that and at the same time and kind of get that culture of safety kind of built? And so a lot of the times I think that organizations, while they want to have a culture of safety, there isn't really one, especially when it comes to nurses needing help. Because we, like I said, you know, we view that that we're going to be penalized by the board of nursing, or we're going to be penalized by our organization for having emotions beyond just this traditional looking forward to, you know, getting help. So like, then we have all this other burden, you know, and it's internalized, but it's internalized from the organization perspective. It's like, man, we're going to be punished for this if we feel this way.
Absolutely. What are some of the warning signs that a nurse, that a peer, a coworker may be struggling with their mental health and even possibly being at risk of suicide?
Yeah. So, you know, there's several changes in behavior, right? So maybe they're increasingly absent or even tardy. Maybe they've withdrawn from their colleagues and social activities. They may have difficulty concentrating, making decisions, or even remembering things. They may be uncharacteristically irritable, angry, or even have mood swings. They may start neglecting their personal appearance or hygiene. They may even increase their substance use, such as alcohol or even illegal drugs, and maybe even engage in reckless behavior or risk-taking. Some emotional signs are persistent sadness, hopelessness, feelings of emptiness, excessive anxiety, worry, or fearfulness, even overwhelming feelings of guilt or worthlessness, loss of interest in enjoyed activities, or even a sense of apathy or emotional numbness. Some physical changes you might notice are significant changes in appetite or weight, sleep disturbances. So maybe they're sleeping too much or not enough. A lot of muscle pains, aches, or digestive problems, chronic fatigue or low energy. And maybe even they express it, right? So maybe they talk about feeling trapped or wanting to escape. Maybe they express that they're a burden to others. They maybe fixate on death or making comments about suicide. Even in jest, they should be taken seriously. Or they may give away possessions or get their affairs in order. Any talk of suicide should be taken extremely seriously. These signs might be attributed to other causes, but always offer support and encourage a person to seek professional help. That just lets them know that you're thinking about them. And not everyone will exhibit obvious signs. So you want to pay attention to subtle changes, or even if something feels off about a colleague, and get yourself involved and get others involved so that you can kind of navigate that together. And kind of not in a punitive way, but in a like, hey, we're concerned about you. How can we help you? How can we navigate this together?
If you were evaluating a nurse for PTSD, what are some things that you might look for the specific to healthcare worker?
Yeah. So I think the mood changes that we talked about, irritability or anger, or maybe even their hypervigilance. So like, let's say you approach your colleague and you like just touch their shoulder and they jump, right? That might be a concern. Increased distractibility, avoidance, right? So maybe they get assigned a patient that reminds them of a really traumatic experience that they had. And they're like, I don't want to take this patient. I don't want to take it. And so then you're like, oh, this isn't, you know, that might be a warning sign. Maybe they've started to avoid other people. So maybe they isolate themselves at work, or maybe somebody who used to be really talkative isn't so talkative anymore. And so those are really some of the signs that somebody might be experiencing PTSD. Sometimes they're not super covert, you know, overt. And so you have to look for covert changes, you know, especially that like hyper startle response and hyper vigilance. So maybe even if they like seem like they're suspicious of people, that might be a good sign that somebody is experiencing PTSD. Especially too, if you know that you have like a high trauma ridden kind of area and you know, you work in a part of the clinic or the hospital that really could experience a lot of trauma exposure and reliving that trauma. And especially too, if they've told you that like, oh man, I had this patient and they're kind of experiencing a little bit of distress. Maybe they don't even know that they have PTSD, but they've told you in confidence before, like, I had this patient who had X experience and it made me feel some kind of way. And then maybe you start noticing these signs and you might be like, okay, yeah, this might be PTSD. And so just kind of nudging people to get help is probably the best thing that we could do on that individual level.
So I want to sit on PTSD just a few minutes longer, because one of the things that I always identified with PTSD, you know, you always hear it with like veterans, you know, people in the military, and it's usually like this event that happened and then they have PTSD. I am just becoming aware and understanding that sometimes it's not just one event. It can be a compounding of multiple events that have happened over a time frame. Can you kind of expand a little bit on how nurses, you know, it's not just necessarily one event. It could be a buildup of things that have happened and not being able to debrief it.
Yeah. So your first COVID patient, like we'll take COVID for example, but your first COVID patients probably didn't traumatize you, right? Like your first COVID patient wasn't your 100th COVID patient, right? And they're all experiencing the same stuff, right? So let's say you had 100 patients and even 20 of them ended up with severe disease or dying. You're going to start building up that trauma and building up that response to them. You know, it's like, man, I'm exposed to this chronic sickness. Like there are at least, you know, at least now 100 people who have had COVID severe enough to be in the hospital or severe enough to be seeking treatment. And it kind of like starts to discourage you because it's like, well, are we ever going to get better? Are we ever going to get out of this? And so you can start cycling through those thoughts of, you know, the cumulative effect, like I said, one COVID patient, even 10 COVID patients aren't going to be nearly as significant as you start getting up in number and the experiences are bad, right? Like they're really sick or it's really heavy. I think about for me, you know, the cumulative effects of treating homeless people or, you know, people who are experiencing homelessness. It's really challenging, and that's my main job. And so that lack of resource, like one patient who's homeless, it maybe isn't as bothersome, right? But like that's all I see. And then it's like, man, it's like, are there resources out there? Like, are we really doing, you know? And so it's just that reliving of that experience repetitively. You know, you fall off a bike once, you're probably going to get back on the bike, but you know, you fall off the bike 50 times, you're not getting on that bike anymore. And when you see the bike, you're going to be like, no, this is traumatic. This experience, when I get on the bike, I'm going to fall. So it's kind of like that, you know, once is fine, you know, but when it starts becoming cumulative, the more scrapes you have, the less likely you are going to get back on that bike. And the more likely you are to experience trauma, associated with that. And that's, yeah, it's a big deal.
So when it comes to nursing, would you say that there's a correlation between, say, those who see trauma and death, such as your ICU, you know, critical care nurses versus your ED nurses, seeing more of kind of some mental health issues there, even ones that aren't identified? You know, a lot of people don't come out and identify and say, hey, I think I do have PTSD, or I think I do have anxiety or depression, or do you see it more in those areas?
Yeah, I think so. And even like thinking about individuals who work on psychiatric units, right? Because you're always exposed to that mental illness. Like it's, and especially because, you know, the hospital setting is not well people, right? These people are sick and they are not doing well. The ED is a little different, right? Because sometimes people treat that like an urgent care. They really treat it like a primary care sometimes. Like, yeah. I just have an ear infection.
I need to go see a doc.
Yeah. So it's like, oh man, this ear infection is not the same as somebody who's on a ventilator. And when you have a unit that is full of patients with ventilators who maybe aren't getting better, right? Maybe, you know, I think there was a study that I had read, like 50% of people who are in the ICU don't leave the ICU. And then I think less than 25% were alive in a year. And so that's alarming, right? So when you say only 25% of people survive the ICU, that means 75% of your ICU patients are dying. And when you're constantly exposed to this death cycle and everything, that's traumatizing. That's really challenging. And so there are more vulnerabilities in those units where we're experiencing higher death volumes. And, you know, like the palliative care floor is probably going to experience a lot more of that versus, like you said, a standard, neurology unit. They're going to probably have a little more morality because they aren't in the ICU. They got out of the ICU, right? So that 25%, that's who you're experiencing. So you're going to have a lot better of an experience, I think, overall.
Absolutely. And I mean, even in your, you know, med-surg units, you still get those codes and those unexpected deaths that, you know, you weren't prepared for. But it's that continual hit. And us, I feel like, not working through the pain or the trauma that we saw. We're taught to compartmentalize it. And is that good? Is it good to compartmentalize?
It can be in the moment, right? Because we want to be able to handle it in the moment, right? So if we're in a code, not compartmentalizing it is going to relate, cause us direct issues. But when we don't debrief after, especially shortly after, I would say within 24 to 48 hours, that's the compartmentalization that we don't need to do, that we really need to avoid, because that is going to get us to the next aspect of PTSD, where we start accumulating it because we're not breaking it down and we're not processing it. And so it's stored in our trauma center, but not in the rest of our brain. And so we got to integrate those memories, and debriefing helps us integrate those memories into not trauma center.
Right. And I really hate to end this discussion here, but there's just so much more to discuss. But we will pick this back up in episode 2, where we will discuss the roles healthcare organizations can play in improving healthcare providers' mental health and strategies to protect our own mental health. So to our listeners, I hope you will continue listening to our discussion in episode 2. And Dr. Ward, thank you so much for spending time with us and talking with us through this really tough topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to and learning from this podcast CE activity. Did you know that you can listen, subscribe, and share Elite Learning podcasts on podcast platforms like Apple, Spotify, and Google? Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform today and never miss a new episode. To earn your certificate, follow the prompts to complete the CE activity.